Song of Ascents of Solomon. Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labour in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord, the fruit of the womb a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate.
Verse this morning in the seventh sermon in the series on Genesis 1. And probably one more to go for Genesis 1 before we get into chapter 2. Verse 28 simply says this. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Amen. So let's cut to the chase. How many children should a married couple have? How do you work that out? Do you go by the current average fertility rate of 1.58 children? And do you round that up or down? Do you go by the fertility rate of 1950, which was 3.5? Or 1800, which was 6? Or in China in 1970, which was 6.3? Or do you go by car size? There's 3 seats in the back of the car, 3 will do. Do you go by carbon footprint? At one stage, the chair of the Government Sustainable Commission said 2. Anything more than that's irresponsible. Sorry, Higgs and Hopkins. Or do you go by family history? My wife is 1 of 7, I'm 1 of 7, that equals 7. Let's not go there. So how many? Of course, the Bible doesn't give us a magic number. However, it does give us principles and some very important principles that impact the whole fabric of society. These principles are the difference between a society that embraces family or one that sees it as an inconvenience, one that has enough critical mass to keep the economy going, or one that's either shrinking or relies on immigration. As in Australia's case, one that has enough children to care for elderly parents, or one that doesn't, one that has many strong family networks, or one that struggles more and more with loneliness. The list goes on. Foundational stuff, to say the least, and foundational stuff that should be important to all of us, regardless of our season of life. But before you assume the sermon is only about family size, it's not. Because once we get to the bottom of our text, our sights are raised to the bigger plan of God, to make disciples. There is a sense in which be fruitful and multiply does actually apply to everybody here this morning. And it's at its deepest level, this text actually asks some very heart-searching questions as to what really is the point. What really is the point of family life for a start? What is the point of whatever season you're in? And so we're looking at some more very big matters this morning, some more very fundamental issues of society. The key phrase today is be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The basic message is be fruitful and multiply. Before we even look at what fruitfulness means, though, there is some more, some truth that comes before that. That is, we're not in control of fruitfulness, physical or spiritual. The first thing we actually see in this verse is Fruitfulness is built on the blessing of God. Many couples and families can testify to the fact that family life actually didn't turn out the way they had hoped or expected or planned for. Some families are affected by infertility and miscarriage. Some were not able to have the number of children they wished to have. Some families are affected by serious health issues. One lady in the Free Reformed Church wrote in an article, quote, "My personal experience was filled with infertility, bed rest, a traumatic birth, severe postpartum depression, and ultimately a decision to no longer pursue biological children." These are very difficult situations which we need to be aware of and handle with care. See, living in a broken world is not easy, and all of these people, and some or many of you can testify to that. Faithful Christians in the past and in the present have had great struggles in this area. And so we're reminded from the outset, our destiny is not in our hands, it's in God's. We read at the beginning of verse 28, "And God blessed them." This phrase is very easily overlooked, and yet everything depends on it. To receive God's blessing, of course, is to receive his favor, and his blessing is necessary for all of life. But it's particularly necessary, of course, for this area of being fruitful and multiply. Psalm 127 says likewise, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain." That's true of a physical house. It's also true of a family. As verse 3 in that psalm says, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord." The Bible couldn't be clearer that family life is built on the blessing of God. It was never based on the ancient fertility cults. It wasn't based on human effort, but on the blessing of God. Why do we need to be reminded of that principle and of this phrase before we go any further? There are two reasons. It should fill us with empathy for those who struggle. Big families can look down on small families, and small families can look down on big families. All the while, they can lack empathy for the situation that the Lord has led each family into. It's very easy to be judgmental about someone else's motives and choices when in many cases it was completely out of their control. The inability to conceive or to be able to have more children for various reasons is a grief that a couple has to work through. And so we mourn with those who mourn. And then the second reason to be reminded of this principle is many families can just be simply too proud and overconfident. The unbeliever likes to think they're in control. They even speak of birth control. But we're not in control. And many Christians, although they know better, or ought to know better, are simply far too proud about their plans for family life. Far too proud. I attended a wedding once and the bride got up and she said, "Well, you know, this is our plans. We're going to have one child there and then we're going to have a second child there. We'll do a bit of travel there and then three and four will come along." I was cringing in my seat. How can you say such things and plan your life in such an absolute way? James 4:13 says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring." So I counsel young people, young marrieds, young families to plan and talk about family size with all humility before God. He may have other plans for you in his wisdom. Plans which may pierce our hearts at times and cause much grief as we come to grapple with those different plans. But nevertheless, he may have different plans which are good plans for you. They're always good plans for me and for you, because God's made a promise to you and me that he works all things, even our family size, to the good of those who love him. So as you can see, the opening phrase is very important in reinforcing we live in a world ruled by God. And so this should cause us to approach the whole topic with humble reliance on God. That said, the second thing is be fruitful and multiply children. The context to this, of course, is marriage. Previously in verse 27, it speaks of God bringing together male and female. And their marriage is alluded to. It's not spoken explicitly there because Genesis 1 has a different purpose. In Genesis 2, we get more the point of view from within creation, and then marriage is fleshed out in chapter 2. But there's no doubt that marriage is the context to this mandate. Now, once a couple is married, what are they to do? What ought to be the purpose of any given marriage? Well, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Boys and girls, what does it mean to be fruitful and multiply? What are we actually talking about? We're talking about watermelons or corn or... just talking about more babies, aren't we? That's what the text is talking about. God brings a husband and wife together so they can have children. This is not the only purpose for marriage, though, of course. The Westminster Confession speaks of four purposes when it gathers up all the biblical material. Procreation, as in this text. Companionship, because it's not good for man to be alone, and that comes out in Genesis 2. Raising up godly children, Malachi 2:15, which in essence is about building the church of tomorrow. And four, to prevent immorality, 1 Corinthians 7. By providing the right context for sexual desire, a sexual outlet. So there are many purposes, but the particular purpose that Genesis 1:28 is focusing on is procreation. And that's the immediate meaning of the words, be fruitful and multiply. I've seen some weird and wacky explanations that try to get around this, and they talk about having a productive day and about this and that, but it's as it says, marriage is about having babies. The fall hasn't changed this fundamental purpose of marriage, the mandate. It was given to all of humanity now before the fall, but it didn't change after the fall because this mandate was given to Noah after the flood. Same again, be fruitful and multiply. Marriage is still about having babies. But doesn't that sound very odd in our day to be speaking like this? To have babies, why? I mean, more and more people are coming up with reasons not to have babies. It's getting so bad, there's a significant increase of young childless men who are getting surgery, you know what I mean. An article in The Australian called The Big Snip points to this alarming trend. A couple of reasons for the reluctance include, for example, environmental. There's the old myth of overpopulation. Way back in the 1800s, Thomas Malthus predicted mankind would run out of food, he said. He said that back in the 1800s, and it's been spun ever since. And many more have jumped on that bandwagon. But suffice to say, the dire predictions have never materialized. New food sources are invented, new technologies are invented to make things more productive and so on. And in fact, agroecologist Eric Holt Gimenez says factors such as war, political corruption and failure often cause famines, not overpopulation. So it's a crock anyway. It's actually our problem, our sin problem, creating all these wars and ruining the food supplies. More recently, the emphasis, of course, has shifted to carbon footprint, and that latest myth seems to be a warmed-up version, because the problem is it sees humanity as completely negative and destructive. But it forgets the positive contributions that humanity can make and are called to make. God put "be fruitful and multiply" right next to be responsible rulers of his creation. The two actually go together, stewardship and family life. Now, another reason for reluctance is, of course, lifestyle. So one bloke, Harris, he says, well, I like being able to travel, to hang out with friends, to go out, and I don't know how I'd have the time to have a child. Sadly, many Christians view children as cramping their lifestyle too. And isn't it ironic that in Australia, Australia has some of the biggest houses in the world and yet one of the lowest birth rates, fertility rates? So this text is very countercultural, but it's not just countercultural. It's not just us about trying to be countercultural. We're not trying to be oddballs for the sake of it. We don't take pride in that. It's about God's design. And as such, God's design is always the pathway to blessing. As we'll see in a moment, this is a mandate for God's glory, but it's also a mandate for our blessing and the blessing of society. Why should the wisdom of God sound odd? There's simply too much negative talk about children in society and even sometimes in the church. Let's listen to God's point of view. Psalm 127. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior are the children of one's youth. Blessed is the man who fills his quiver with them. He shall not be put to shame when he speaks with his enemies in the gate. The psalm is using some very practical situations from that day and age to make the point. The gifts and abilities of children come to be a great blessing to the family. That's what it's saying. They're not liabilities to the family, but assets. They put the family in a place of strength. If we were to use a present-day illustration, it might go like this. What a blessing when seniors have their children to visit, to help, to speak up for, to financially support and to protect from elder abuse. You know how many people in rest homes don't get visits? Many. How blessed that our seniors get visits from their children and that many of you go and visit seniors. What a blessing. But that's not always what people hear in our day and age. Don't hear always about the blessings. A particular couple at Hillsong counsels couples in this way. What's their sage advice? Think twice before having children, they say. Go and sit down with parents and get them to tell you everything that sucks about parenthood. What psalm is that from? Rather, as Christians, we approach family size from God's design, and that marriage is for raising children that are a blessing. And we trust God's wisdom rather than the culture when we make these decisions. And so if you're still in that season of life, be fruitful and multiply. Of course, there are factors such as age and health and all these things that we consider. But when we think about the context in which we make our decisions, the context is be fruitful and multiply. The context is children are a blessing. I'm not going to say it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. You know how it is. Doesn't mean there's not going to be sleepless nights and all of those sorts of things. But we trust God. We make these decisions in the context of this passage and the fact that children are a blessing. This is God's design. These are reasons enough to be fruitful and multiply, but there's actually a greater context to all of this. The final thing we see is be fruitful and multiply disciples. What is the purpose of everything? The purpose of everything is God's glory. What is the grand vision of Scripture? God's glory. Psalm 57:11, be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. Boys and girls, what's that first request of the Lord's Prayer? See, it begins, Our Father in Heaven, and then the first request is, hallowed be your name. That means to give God's name all the glory it deserves. This is why humanity was created in the image of God. Originally, humanity was to display this glory of God. And you might remember that practice of the ancient Eastern kings to set up a statue of their person in a newly won territory to show that they claimed dominion over that territory, was theirs. And so they put their statue there. Likewise, God creates humanity in his image to be his royal rulers, his representatives on this earth, to reflect his glory. Now think of what that means when we consider this mandate, be fruitful and multiply. It's not just then about having more babies. It's more than that. It's actually part of this grand vision to have God's glory displayed across the earth. That was the original plan and vision. This vision was given to Noah after the flood, but then it was passed on to Abraham. And the vision was being fulfilled through God's people Israel. And so significantly, in Exodus chapter 1, verse 7, it quotes five words from Genesis 1, when it says this: "But the people of Israel were fruitful and grew exceedingly strong, so that the land was filled with them." There's no doubt it's alluding back to Genesis 1:28. Because the grand vision is to display God's glory. To put it differently, the grand vision is not just more babies, but more disciples. It's about both physical and spiritual fruitfulness. And so there's two important implications then that flow from that. Family life is about discipleship, not simply baby making. You know the passage well. Ephesians 6:4, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the training, in the discipline, sorry, and instruction of the Lord." Of course, we don't have control over the spiritual outputs of our homes. And just as we're dependent on God's blessing for physical life, we're dependent on the blessing of God for spiritual life. However, with God's blessing, with his blessing, it puts your family life and mine in a whole new light. Because then it's not just about children, it's about raising the disciples. It's about church planting. It's about building the church of tomorrow and the nation of tomorrow. It's not just another mess to clean up on the floor. It's not just another long conversation with your teenager. It's not just another restless night of sleep. It's within this broader vision to display God's glory on the earth. You see how significant then your family life is, and how significant, mums and dads, your roles are. Be fruitful and multiply for God's glory. The other implication is multiplication can happen without baby making. The great 16th century reformer John Calvin was mocked by his opponents because he had no children. His son died in infancy. His opponents said it was a curse from God. How did John Calvin respond? He simply said he had many spiritual children. That's the same language that the Apostle Paul used before him. The letter of 1 Timothy is addressed to, quote, "Timothy, my true child in the faith." You see, as we know, on this side of the fall, there is no guarantee to have physical children. But everybody can still be involved in this precious ministry of multiplication. There are some instances where a couple might even forego having children because of a particular ministry God has laid upon their path. Jesus seems to allude to that in Mark 10:29 when he says, "Truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or lands for my sake and for the gospel." All this is to say that there is an important role in this grand vision for everybody. Everybody is called to multiply God's glory on the earth. And maybe God will call you to being able to have children, and maybe not. But whatever the case, this is the vision for all of us. Notice how sharing the gospel is not at odds with being fruitful and multiplying, but actually ties into it. In light of these implications, this text then, and now we come to these heart-searching questions. This text asks some very hard questions of us this morning. Because the core issue then becomes this: are we really concerned for the glory of God? Do we really care about multiplication through families or Christian ministry and or Christian ministry? What's your attitude towards children? What's your attitude towards sharing the gospel? See, the culture says, we know what the culture says. It says, live for pleasure. And, you know, there are TV ads showing mum and dad jumping for joy in the house because the kids have left to go somewhere. And they're jumping for joy. But the kids can come back if they bring KFC. It's the I don't care, I love it lifestyle. More to the point, I don't care because I love myself and my desires and my plans for my life. All the while, robbing God of his rightful glory, the one who ought to be hallowed above all, the center of all, who's created and who is sustaining our very life. How can we even say that? This is the world by which he created and put mankind upon to display his glory, not to rob it. Could it be that we are robbing God of his glory? There are too many lame excuses for Christian families not having more children. I've heard some. There are too many lame attitudes towards children. I've heard some. There are too many lame excuses for not sharing the gospel. I've heard it. Are we concerned for the spread of God's glory? Let us repent of the self-centeredness that still lies there. And why be so concerned about this theme? Why be concerned about the glory of God? Well, did we not see this morning? Did we not hear this morning what God has done for us? We belong to him now. Our life belongs to him. Our family life, our vision for family life, our goals, our expectations, our all, we lay it before him, for he has laid down everything in his son for us. God has done it all for us. He sent his son to forgive, heal, and restore lost glory. And he so loved us to come and share in all the blessings of heaven. That's the why. So in conclusion, there's no set number. People often ask, myself or my wife, how many do you plan to have? The answer is the same every time. One at a time. Be faithful in the situation that God has called you to. That'll lead to a variety of family sizes. But the attitude will be the same by God's grace. We are serving the Lord and his glory. Celebrate families and the work they do. Celebrate gospel work that others do. Celebrate when we are spreading the glory of God. Don't forget the big picture. That's what we're working to. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. Amen.